Hello, and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go Away U Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Hello.
And U Street.
Hey, y'all.
Well, it's we're coming off the bye week. I would love to say that Minnesota won the bye week since all the really tough news happened after the bye week was officially over?
Yeah, I think we can say Minnesota won the bye week and is currently losing this week.
Okay, losing Nebraska week. We've won the bye week, currently losing Nebraska week. As you have heard, I guess, that sounds excited. I'm not excited, but Curtis Dunlap Jr. has decided to enter the transfer portal and will not be playing further for Minnesota. Also, additionally, we'll talk about this as well. Trey Potts is officially out for the year due to the unspecified injury he suffered during the end of the Purdue game. But let's start with Dunlap. Obviously, you know, offensive line was an area that I think generally we felt was a potential strength, or certainly at least a returning area of success for the Gophers. Dunlap was supposed to be a big part of that. And now the Gophers will be without him. Other than the, you know, obvious, hey, they're down a guy, what do you really see this doing to the Gopher offense? And I'll start with Street.
I don't know. I'm sure the basic version is they probably will rotate fewer people. Perhaps a consequence of rotating fewer people is they will have less quote-unquote jumbo packages, which thus far this year have generally been garbage anyway. Though I don't think it is obviously the case that when you lose a starting lineman, not great. While it is true this year that the Gophers both have a lot more depth on the offensive line than they have in years past, and as I suspect Andy will mention in the actual flipping of this, have someone who could be inserted onto the right side of the line who is very good, it's not awesome. On the other hand, I do not think the primary reason why the University of Minnesota football team's offense is at best anemic has much to do with who is playing right guard.
Andy, like, what do you see? Like, what is your projected shift for how the line looks?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. You know, looking at some of the stats that have come out after Dunlap, it was announced he's going into the portal. I mean, of the Gophers, I guess you could argue six starting linemen, as they've been pretty much rotating six guys through five spots all season long. Dunlap's Pro Football Focus ratings are sixth out of six out of them, both run blocking and pass blocking. So, you know, he hasn't been as effective coming off of his Achilles injury he suffered last season as much as you'd hoped. But what it really probably does, and you know, this may be one of the reasons why he left, is the offensive line room may have had a come-to-Jesus conversation, deciding that they weren't going to do the rotation anymore, and Dunlap might have been the lone man out, relegated back to the bench, which is why he may be taking off. But you know, you're gonna see a pretty steady starting five of you know, Sam Schluter at your left tackle, probably Connor Olson at left guard, John Michael Schmitz at center, Blaze Andries at right guard, and then Daniel Falalele at right tackle. Now you could see Olson and Andries potentially flip sides, just so you don't have, you know, absolute giant overload of the right hand side with Andries and Falalele. But you know, they, like I said, they've been rotating it through all along. I think Blaze has played, you know, some snaps at left tackle, some snaps at right guard, some snaps at left guard this season. He's been bouncing all around. So, you know, I think the one positive you're going to see is you're going to see a lot more continuity. You know, that's one of the things that Minnesota may have struggled with, especially as we've seen some of them, you know, slipping up on some of these, on these twists and you know, maneuvers that defenses have pulled on the Gophers that you'd think they should be able to handle. Well, a lot of that comes down to communication, and if you're finding a different guy next to you every other series, it can be a little complicated to potentially, you know, get your communication and timing down. So I think we'll see, you know, a much more standard five-man set. Axel Rushmeyer, who played quite a bit in 2019, after some injuries on the offensive line, basically becomes the sixth swingman right now. So if the Gophers do go jumbo, and I think they still will go jumbo in several situations, you'll see him he'll mend the line as the sixth man, and he becomes the first sub if there are any injuries down the line. You know, hopefully, as we said, hopefully this will allow them to get a little bit more continuity. Tanner will feel a little bit more comfortable back there and be able to have a little bit more success in the passing game. PJ Fleck in his radio show today said this will be the first time this Nebraska game that Minnesota will have all three of its slated starting receivers in Chris Ottman Bell, Daniel Jackson, and Dalen Wright healthy and on the field for both a week of practice and the game. Knock on wood that nobody gets hurt between now and Saturday. So hopefully this will be, you know, you've got a set offensive line, and if Tanner can work with them and has worked with them throughout, you know, bye week and everything like that. And we've got all of our receivers back. And so hopefully, especially obviously now that we're down another starting running back, we might be able to see the pass game have a bit more success this week.
As long as somebody takes the Five Bits of Broken Chair trophy to the Wildcat, I don't want to see that anymore. I'm just putting that out there. You can stop calling the Wildcat.
It's also not a Wildcat the second you actually have a quarterback under center, which Cole Kramer most certainly is. And whether or not he'll actually ever be allowed to throw out of that package, unclear. But definitionally, no longer a Wildcat either.
Well, I do think, to make you sad, Chris, I think you're going to see actually more of the Wildcat now.
No.
Because the Gophers have actually had some decent success running. It's with Cole Kramer and Williams back there as sort of a lead running back. The addition is, as we've said, you know, Kramer is a quarterback, so even more so than Seth Green in past years, you actually do have a legitimate passing threat back there. So I do think that is part of the benefit. They started out running the Wildcat earlier this year with Ibrahim and Potts, and then Potts alone. Now, since they've been running with Kramer, you legitimately have a passing threat. So I do think that will be a part of a game plan here at some point between now and the end of the season, is you will see, you know, Cole Kramer fake the run and throw, whether it be to the tight end or whether it be to a receiver or something like that. And I do think, honestly, you know, it has worked. And if Minnesota doesn't, you know, overuse it, and you do show that you have that passing threat with Kramer back there, it can be an effective tool. Where we've seen it in the past, though, is, I mean, we were clamoring for Seth Green to throw the damn ball for 2 years, and he finally did a couple of times because, I mean, the defense eventually keys in that, okay, he's going to run the ball up the middle. And, I mean, you can figure that out pretty fast. So I do think that, you know, if they are going to run that package, that Sanford's got to put in a couple of planned passes for Kramer just to keep the defense honest. And if they can do that, then I do think it can be a successful package.
Still do not want, I mean, if I trusted that they would actually throw from it, I do not trust that. Do not want.
Of course, if they actually threw from it, you may as well just keep your starting quarterback on the field and run it in some form of a read option. But that is neither here nor there.
Well, I mean, you could, but let's be honest. We've seen both Tanner and Kramer run. Kramer is a better runner.
Kramer is a substantially better runner. Don't get me wrong. This is my sort of annoyance, perhaps shared, perhaps not, with Chris about that particular package, which is, it's one thing if the person who is behind is Seth Green and you need a yard. Because really what you're saying there is, I want a huge body to fall forward. Maybe, maybe not at some point. I might throw to the tight end if someone doesn't cover him, but probably not. When you bring in Cole Kramer, so you just bring in a regular quarterback, certainly a much better runner, but if all you're ever going to do is have it be basically a QB draw, that's functionally what that package turns into, since I don't actually recall that they have ever handed the ball off. For that matter, I don't actually recall they did it even under Seth Green. But certainly when Ibrahim and Potts were running it, I can't recall if they ever handed the ball off to the running back who was not the direct snap receiver. So if all Cole Kramer is going to do is run the ball, you might as well set up a situation for which people have to at least honor the fact that you might pass. But then again, this team seems to recruit 15 wide receivers every cycle and never throw to them. So what do I know?
Yeah, I'd be happier with a slant. Quick slant. Anyway. All right, Trey Potts officially out for the year. As we noted at the top, there is not a defined reason for why he's out. I mean, he was in the hospital for, I believe, 5 days in West Lafayette. Definitely a serious deal, whatever it is. We're certainly not going to speculate. Speculating is the dumbest and, frankly, most irresponsible thing you could do in this case. The kid got hurt seriously, thankfully appears to be recovering well. And frankly, that's all that matters. He's out for the season. I don't really care why it happened. I just want the kid to be well. Not from any football perspective, just to be well. And to be able to move on with his life with or without football. We don't know what that means yet. So, you know, I'm sure more information will continue to come out. But it's not going to come from PJ Fleck. It's going to come from Trey Potts and his family if they feel compelled to share, and if they don't, good on them. And you know, we wish Trey Potts nothing but the best. I really don't know what else to say about it. I just get really pissed off when people sit there and try to make up reasons that they don't have any idea what happened, and that's end my rant.
Good rant.
I mean, We do all agree that it is seriously, and I mean, PJ Fleck, again, in his radio show, basically, you know, intonated that as much as he can, saying, you know, he actually was transferred from a West Lafayette hospital to an Indianapolis hospital for a few days. So we know it definitely was serious. He is on the mend. He's back home. His family's still here, and PJ said hopefully he'll be back with the team here soon, you know, sort of in a you know, watching him practice, hanging out, not actually practicing in playing capacity, but so I think that's all good news. And, yeah, we obviously want him to get back to as close to normal or as close to normal as possible as soon as he possibly can. And, you know, I think everybody would love to see him on the sidelines, just like, I mean, I think seeing what Mo Ibrahim has been doing on the sidelines on his scooter out there, almost acting as another offensive coach, you know, just the sight of Potts out there in that similar situation, I think would be great to see as we get to the closer to the end of the season. So hopefully we get to see that. But I mean, he's out for the year. It is what it is. And Minnesota now has to turn to a pair of freshman running backs who most likely are going to be picking up the slack and taking control of this rushing offense for the last, seven plus games of the season. So, Bucky Irving and Kai Thomas, it's your time to shine. And hopefully they can, you know, again, going back to the offensive line, we got a more stable offensive line here, and hopefully they can figure out and find some holes and find some gaps and try and, you know, jump up and take that number one spot to heart.
Well, you know, I think it leads itself to the question of how does this offense perform against Nebraska this weekend? Blake normally here to give us our preview. I think he's still ducking Blake. We ask Blake a hockey question, but until he returns, I'm going to turn it right back to you, Andy, to ably fill in for Blake on the preview. In your mind, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing Minnesota when going against Nebraska?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, the biggest challenge for Minnesota is going to be trying to get a consistent offense. I mean, Nebraska's defense has really improved this year from what we've seen. PJ Fleck, again, his radio show was talking about how they've had the same sort of core for the last couple of years, and they're all coming into their own, you know, very similar to how the Gopher defense did back in 2019. They had a lot of quality players that had been in the program for a long time and finally came in. Nebraska's defense isn't a top 10 in the country by any means. They're in the middle of the pack. They're giving up about 135 rushing yards a game and 200 passing yards a game, but they've also held three top 10 teams to less than single possession games. Admittedly, Nebraska's defense is playing really well, and Minnesota's going to have to figure out what type of offense they're going to be able to pull off against the Cornhuskers. I mean, you're bringing in two running backs who have had, you know, relative success against Colorado, haven't had really as much success since then the last couple of weeks. You've got a passing game that hasn't quite fully clicked. We saw more downfield shots against Purdue 2 weeks ago than we'd seen all season up to then. So, can the Gopher offense click against the Nebraska defense? I mean, that's what it's going to be. I think the Gopher defense is probably going to be able to hold their own, as we've seen so far most of the way through the season. The defense has done a pretty good job. Obviously, Nebraska's got some playmakers. You know, we joke Adrian Martinez and has been not great the last few years, but even he's seemed to be picking things up, you know, and he's always been good with his legs. That's not been the problem. It's been his arm. So obviously Minnesota's going to have to be pretty careful about watching the quarterback run. Apparently Nebraska runs some version of the triple option now as well. So, you know, they're going to have to be ready to see multiple fronts and multiple sets. But I have more confidence in the Gopher defense against the Nebraska offense than I do on the other side, that's for sure.
I will just note, not mildly here, that while it is true that the Nebraska defense is sort of better than one might expect, it is a little bit rich to suggest that, oh, well, it's because they've taken these top 10 teams, because Michigan State is hysterically overrated right now. Michigan is probably overrated as well, and Oklahoma is bad. So in
I mean, admittedly, they may be bad, but I would take any one of those three offenses over ours right now.
Yes, oh, don't get me wrong. When I say they're bad, I don't mean that I don't think Oklahoma would put up a boatload of points against Minnesota. They certainly would. I more mean that these are not, like, it is not the Oklahoma of, you know, say 2 or 3 years ago that is showing up. It is wholly unclear to me why Michigan State is a top 10 team right now. That is mind blowing to me. And I think that Michigan's performance against Nebraska was strange. Now that could be that Nebraska just was doing a very good job, but I found that a strange game to watch, let's say.
My default whenever Michigan does something strange is that Jim Harbaugh and his staff are fucking up. And I think that's a prior that's shown relatively strong correlation to truth. Can't, you know, this is a single incident. We'll see how it plays out this weekend. But when in doubt, just assume Michigan's coaching staff is fucking up somehow.
Yeah, I think Nebraska against Michigan too also had a very timely interception, and so that was, you know, that was useful, I think, as well. And so that game was closer at the end than it probably should have been. I don't think that Nebraska's 22-point third quarter was a little bit of an aberration from the overall game. All of which is separately to say whether or not Minnesota will be able to score in this game, in which I continue to not see any reason to believe that the offensive structure of the University of Minnesota football team is good at all. So having all three receivers is great. Does that mean that they will actually be passed to? And if they are passed to, will they be running routes that don't take 6 seconds to come open? Unclear.
Much like I do not want to see Wildcat as a general rule, or, you know, Colcat or whatever we're calling it, I would really like to see the return of quick passes. Plays that have worked extremely well for Minnesota in the past, against teams like, say, Nebraska. Just
Yeah.
saying.
Maybe we'll
Just
start running jet
saying.
sweeps all of a sudden again, just like a throwback from a couple of years ago on top of it. What I find just immensely strange about how the University of Minnesota offense is also structured is one of the things that does seem very clearly true is that the University of Minnesota football team enjoys running on first and second down regardless. Do you know what also works as a run? A quick 4 yard out. But then it's one-on-one in space. That's a ball that Tanner Morgan is very good at throwing. Tanner Morgan is not tremendously good at throwing the sort of deep shot.
Yeah, you've pretty much hit upon why I would like to see that return to the offensive game plan. They had an extra week. Who knows what happened?
Maybe they will take a page out of what I'm led to believe is was the only good part of the Vikings offense last year, the sort of short to intermediate throw game, and just do that all game. That would be nice. Even one would be kind of cool.
All right, it's Nebraska week, which means it is also Broken Chair week. If you have not yet donated, a reminder, the Daily Gopher is in no way getting anything from the Broken Charity Drive. This is 100% a fundraiser that goes directly to, on the Minnesota side, the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital, which is also working with Gopher Casey O'Brien to build a new infusion center, but also on the Nebraska side, the Team Jack Foundation. As of earlier today, actually as of like 10 minutes ago, Minnesota was actually quite a ways behind in the fundraising, having raised just under $7,400, while Nebraska, in part thanks to a very generous challenge donation, is now at almost $11,200. The first thing to say is just a great job to all the fan bases for being supportive. This is the most money already, with many days left in this week before the game. This is the most single season dollar amount raised, as they're over $17,000 in the Broken Charities history. And we would encourage Gopher fans who have not yet donated to take an opportunity to go to brokenchairtrophy.com and get their donation in before Saturday. It's an opportunity just to participate in a fun little historical rivalry thing that's been going on now for, we are in the sixth year. Just good times all around. I'm excited, as always, for the Broken Chair Trophy portion of this week. And it would be wonderful if some quick slants or any other innovative offensive game plans allowed the chair to, quote, stay with the University of Minnesota, although it, you know, is not officially sanctioned and has to live in the shadows for right now. We are excited, as the blog, to announce the return of Homefield Apparel as a podcast sponsor. Not familiar with Homefield? They're going to have stuff that you love to wear. Comfortable gear, cool vintage designs. Everyone on the blog freaking loves this stuff. You may recall from the pod earlier this summer how over the moon we were that they were finally releasing Minnesota stuff. Nothing makes us happier than great Gopher gear. So if you want some of your own, use the code DAILYGOPHER during checkout at homefieldapparel.com for 15% off your first purchase with the good brand. That is code DAILYGOPHER at homefieldapparel.com. Hockey. Andy, I don't know how to feel about hockey. It didn't seem like the men did as well against Mercyhurst as we had planned, although they did get the sweep, and the women split against UMD, so I'm not clear after last week's, you know, gotta do better talk, if that's good enough. Fill me in.
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with the men. Yeah, they did pick up the sweep over Mercyhurst. They won 7-4 on Friday night and 5-3 on Saturday. Lessons we learned from the weekend: this team can score goals. They have a high powered offense, and this freshman class is going to be really good. Matthew Knees knocked in his first two collegiate goals on Friday, and then added at least an assist on Saturday. Chaz Lush has had a couple assists on the weekend, couldn't quite get one in the net himself, but this freshman class is living up to the hype through the first weekend, and so I think that's definitely a positive. Negatives are the Gopher defense looked horrible at times this weekend. Admittedly, you know, they have a lot of either two-way or offensively minded defensemen between Jackson Lacombe, Ryan Johnson, and Brock Faber, and it looked that way a lot this weekend. There were a couple of times where with Johnson and Lacombe made just horrible passes that ended up costing them. Lacombe started off the game Saturday night with a horrible turnover and then followed that up by taking a horrible penalty, which allowed Mercyhurst to score on their first power play of the game just a couple minutes into the game. They'd actually make it 2-0 before the Gophers would claw back and take over, as their talent was significantly higher. Another thing to watch and be a little concerned about going forward is Jack LaFontaine. Obviously, we said, you know, earlier, this team will go as far as Jack LaFontaine can take them. He didn't look great on the weekend. Now, how much of that was his defense leaving him hung out to dry, and how much of that was him just not seeing the puck? We'll have to see. But he definitely was not as sharp as you might have expected him to be after the season he had last year. He did, you know, let in a couple of weaker goals, and I mean, his save percentage, he was I think, second or third in the nation in save percentage last year. This weekend alone is going to put a huge dent in his chance to come anywhere close, as his save percentage is probably hovering in the low 90% range, I would guess, if not even a little bit lower. At one point Saturday, he had allowed 3 goals on 6 shots, which you can do the math on that one. Not so hot. But they did get the sweep. They are 2-0. They remain number 4 in the national poll this week. And we will have an idea after this weekend how much closer they are to the top teams as number 2 St. Cloud State comes into Mariucci Friday night, and then they take the drive up I-94 to play at the National Hockey Center in St. Cloud on Saturday. St. Cloud just split a series down in Mankato with number 1 Minnesota State this past weekend. They've got a ton of talent. This will be a legitimate test for the Gophers. Can their offense keep up? I think they can, but their defense is going to have to play a hell of a lot better than they did last weekend, or else the Gophers are going to get into a shootout and they're going to end up, you know, playing one of these 8-6 type games where they very easily could end up on the wrong side of things. So definitely things to work at. Blake McLaughlin ended up being the Big Ten third star of the week, goal and 4 assists. He and Sammy Walker had their usual great chemistry. So hopefully the Gopher men can continue that into the weekend against the Huskies.
Split, are we okay with that against UMD for the women?
Yeah, I mean, up in Duluth is always a tough place to play. They bounced back after their loss to Ohio State. They took control and won on Friday in a game that, I mean, Minnesota took the lead 2.5 minutes into the game and really held control, winning 3-1. You know, never really showed anything worrisome in that game. But then Saturday was a whole other thing as Minnesota had to claw back from a 3-goal deficit. They scored twice in the last 3 minutes of the third period to force overtime when UMD would win the game 5-4 in overtime, the Gophers getting 1 point out of that series. But it's Minnesota and UMD are probably fairly evenly matched teams this year, and they're going to be in a dogfight for that third and fourth spot in the WCHA all season long. The Gophers, you know, did get the 1 extra point, 4-2, this weekend, and they'll play another big series, obviously, in Minneapolis later in the year. But I think it's undeniable that Wisconsin and Ohio State are definitely, ahead of both these teams, and the Gophers just need to do what they need to do to continue to claw away and stay in that third WCHA spot and sneak their way back into the NCAA tournament, because obviously the WCHA is the strongest conference in college hockey, and they should get 3 solid teams in the NCAA tournament. So it'll be probably a fight between the Gophers and Bulldogs for that 4th spot. You can give weekend 1 to the Gophers, barely, but you can give weekend 1 to the Gophers. And hopefully they can continue. And now they just need to do what they do, and that is beat up on the weaker teams of the conference. I think I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but I think Nate Wells at Gopher State on Twitter posted it after Friday night's win against Duluth, that Minnesota is something like, in the last 5 years in the WCHA, there's something like 93-3-2 against teams not named Ohio State and Wisconsin, which is just insane. So the Gophers will hopefully continue to beat up on bad teams. They've got a weekend series this weekend against Minnesota State. It will be I believe it's a home and home. Yes, it's a home and home. They play at Ritter Friday night, and they go down to Mankato on Saturday. Minnesota State's not very good, although they did split with UMD the first weekend. So it's one of those series that Minnesota should win, both games, no problem. But if they have one of their off nights, there's no reason why the Purple Cows couldn't try and steal a point or two. So hopefully Minnesota will continue to right things and get back and take care of a very sweepable weekend against Minnesota State.
It's almost time for predictions, but before we get there, I want to get us into what made us laugh over the bye week. For me, it was the many faces of Scott Frost. He had some absolutely hilarious reactions caught on camera during the loss to Michigan, and I am here for every moment of it. Hopefully more to come this weekend. Street, what were you entertained by?
Alabama lost, so automatically that becomes the thing that was most enjoyable. They also lost in a particularly amusing way, in that I don't think Texas A&M is a very good football team. Admittedly, this year, I'm actually not sure if any team is a particularly good football team. Maybe Georgia, secretly. But Georgia, I don't know if they've played anyone to actually justify that yet. And I don't believe, for example, that Iowa is a good football team, because they very much would have lost that game had Sean Clifford not gotten injured. But I would say Alabama losing late, Alabama losing because they're turning over the ball instead of getting a touchdown, or making kind of silly mistakes, causing Saban to have sort of mini nuclear anger, hot takes. Like, all of that stuff is hilarious.
I think you summed it up pretty well with Alabama losing, because that's a great starting point. All the other things are great, but Alabama losing is a pretty great starting point. Andy, what made you smile this past weekend?
Well, just the end of the Texas-Oklahoma cluster of a game, watching Texas jumping out really big on Oklahoma, and then Oklahoma going to their backup quarterback, and just the drama and you know, watching both teams try as hard as they can to lose that game before Oklahoma finally pulled it off and got the win, and watching the Texas fans' reactions was pretty entertaining. Another thing going, as Street brought up, the Iowa, if you haven't read it yet, Off Tackle Empire has an article that they posted on Tuesday, their authoritative guide to the Hawkeye fan, an anthropological study of the species, that is literally laugh out loud hilarious. You need to go check that out, especially if you are not a fan of Iowa fans, as I would assume the vast majority of our podcast listeners are not. You need to read this. It is pure gold.
I especially liked how Texas managed to lose in what I feel is basically the most excruciating fashion. Yeah, I mean, it's really quite likely that Oklahoma would have won on the field goal had Texas, you know, contained that last run. But it's college kickers. There's always a chance that something goes wrong. And somehow I also think, like, you can kind of mentally prepare yourself for that letdown. You have a little bit of time as the kicker's getting ready to go, oh, this is over. I'm now preparing myself for sadness. And if he happens to miss, then you get euphoria. But instead, to be like, just, well, the game was going and there was just a little chance of hope, to why didn't anyone tackle anything, touchdown with 1 second left, I thought that was an especially joyful gut punch. And here's to you, Sooners. Predictions. Blake has his prediction up. Will have his prediction up with the preview when it posts, so look for that. In the meantime, I'm gonna get Andy. I want to hear your prediction for the game against Nebraska.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those ones that it's tough to figure out and trying to figure out. You know, PJ Fleck is 2-2 coming out of the bye week. He lost his first two. They've won two in a row, if you can count, you know, the bye week last year, which wasn't really a bye week. It was a, hey, we have to cancel two games because we all got COVID week. But they did come out and they beat Nebraska after their quote-unquote bye week, down 21 men. You know, I do think that Nebraska obviously is playing slightly better than Minnesota is right now, but Nebraska keeps losing in slightly frustrating and hysterical fashion. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say Minnesota got their shit together over bye week. They got things figured out. They got things fixed. The number 30 or 31 has sort of been an interesting number for the Gophers. The Gophers scored 31 in their first two games, obviously losing to Ohio State and then winning against Miami of Ohio. Then they scored 30 against Colorado. And then they combined for 30 in their next two games, scoring 10 against Bowling Green and 20 against Purdue. So we're going to keep that 30 theme going. I predict Minnesota will beat Nebraska 31-30.
Interesting choice. Street?
Not to disagree with my esteemed colleague, but there is never anything frustrating about Nebraska losing. I am going to suggest currently, looking at this at Tuesday evening, the total point number is 48, and I'm going to say bet the under on that.
I will go with... I'm feeling another late loss coming on for Nebraska, which I think should be sufficiently enraging to their fan base. And sufficiently detrimental to Scott Frost's employment hopes. Well, maybe not sufficiently. I don't know that it gets him fired at any point, but certainly wouldn't help anything. But let's go 24-21 Minnesota, with just enough offense to keep us all from going completely insane. Feels about right. As I said, watch for Blake's preview later this week on the Daily Gopher. Get over to Off Tackle Empire, read that funny Iowa post. Make sure to go to brokenchairtrophy.com to get your donation in to support the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital. And in the meantime, go Gophers. Sky Yuma, row the boat.